So, without further ado, I think we're ready to go. Jim?
Thank you, Tom.
And if you have questions, please just walk up. Take your time, walk right up here and use the mic.
Before we have questions, though, there's about 10, 15 more minutes of material I have for you. Okay? This is to make it really practical. One of the things that we're seeing from a depth perspective about what's going on in our country is that our archetypes are spilling over. An archetype is to the interior life, to the human soul or psyche, what your five senses are to your body. It's a way of reading reality. So, archetypally, our nation is at the level of development that's called the warrior archetype. That's why we're involved in so many wars and why we have so much violence. The rest of the world can see it, we can't see it. We just take it for granted. It's like, that's who we are, you know? And we tend to scapegoat certain people. People who are different than us, people who are other, okay? But very succinctly, what this means for us is that because the warrior archetype is spilling over, the way that we're seeing it is, in terms of our humor, we've just seen a political process where it's very evident in that, where civility was gone, name-calling, bullying, lying, deceiving, etc. Okay. The other area is in terms of sports. You've probably seen this a few times where in sports, traditionally, going back to the Greeks and Romans, the work of sports in the gym, even in battles, took place in a specified area. You knew who the athletes were, but now that warrior energy is spilling over into the crowd, literally and symbolically. You know, think about the number of fights and stabbings and killings you've been reading recently in terms of whatever sport is taking place. Not only politically, but we're seeing it in terms of our, quote, entertainment. As some of the stuff that was on the edge of society, we'd call it a backroom brawling, is now front and center. The cage fighting, for example. Okay? So the list goes on and on. What does this mean for what's going on now? Everything. Is that because we've lost respect for the human person, it's most evident in the interior life. That's why we're not a culture of wisdom. We have lots of knowledge. We can make lots of money. We can produce lots of things. That's an area of intelligence, but it's not wisdom. Wisdom goes much deeper. Wisdom is about uncovering the meaning in what's going on. It's asking what we would say in our tradition, the prophetic questions. What's going on here? How do we respond? So I'm going to offer you a metaphor. I believe God is inviting us to a third way. To a third way. And maybe you've been finding rumblings amongst yourself and your friends and family members talking about, well, we need to really work on getting a third and fourth party, even though our Constitution is not set up for that. At some level, these are individuals who are trying to give voice to what's happening on the interior. But the third way is this. It's contemplation and action. And this may surprise you, the key word here is and. And. It's both and. Republicans do not have all the truth. The Democrats do not have all the truth. The independents don't have all the truth. You see? Once we begin to stand on a side and say, we've got the spirit, you know, we've got the truth, and you're all going to hell. When we demonize other, whoever, whatever other is, we've already cut off the possibility of right relationship. We've allowed ourselves to do what so many of the demigods have done in the past. Is to dehumanize the other. This is the danger of the interior life when it becomes dark and shadowy. And so I know we are in the throes of trying to ask ourselves some good questions. I just encourage you, go deep with those questions. It doesn't help spending a lot of energy being negative and just going online or Facebook and letting off steam, etc. That's not helpful to the process. So I want to give you some helps that can help you walk with respect, with humility, with honesty, to go deeper into your interior life so that that can influence how you choose to respond in public social action. So the first thing I would say is to do what the poet said, to sit and observe. Take time to sit and observe. Notice your thoughts. Acknowledge your feelings. They are what they are. Do this humbly and honestly. Acknowledge your hatred, your feeling of being betrayed, your hurt, whatever it may be, just acknowledge it. Secondly, acknowledge the fact that you're grieving. You're grieving the loss of an America that you grew up in. You're grieving the loss where you would truly admire the president, or you admire the candidates who've been elected. Grieving is a long, difficult process. It's giving the space to be gentle with your life. And it's going to come out like a slow cooker. Just give it time to express itself. What are some ways? When my two parents died within 3 weeks of each other, 7 years ago, I put together this whole list and gave it to my family. And we all found it very helpful. But one of the things that I found personally helpful is sentence completions. Sentence completions. In your journal, write down, I'm angry that. I'm sad that. I hate that. I'm hurting that. And just watch and see how your pen goes off the page. If you're better with symbols, just use colors like crayons, markers, or paint. Let the colors choose you. And what are you going to do with them? Okay? Another way that's very helpful in grieving is create a ritual. That's what I'm going to do. When my best friend comes next week, we're going to do a ritual together. Okay? It's a way of acknowledging and containing whatever emotions you're going through. And traditionally, the ancient peoples used this in times of transition, times of trauma, times of great complex of situations. Another area, and the great wisdom from 12 steps. Take a deep breath and pray the Serenity Prayer. You can't do everything. But there are some things you can do. Pray for the gift of wisdom. To know when to speak, when to be silent. When are your words going to be like gasoline on this fire? How and where is God inviting you to truly be a bridge in this situation? I listened to a very good friend of mine the other day on the day of elections tell me why she voted for who she did. I honestly didn't know what to say to her because her logic was so off. So I just listened. And I said, thank you for sharing. So often we feel like we have to give an answer. And I like to look at Jesus' example. Do you know that if you read the scriptures carefully, he rarely answered people's questions? Rarely. He asked a lot of questions. That's what we're supposed to do with adults. And that's why you know you're dealing with somebody who's still living in an infantile, fearful world if they yearn for certainty all the time. But just turn around and ask them a question. That's interesting. Well, what about this? How would you deal with this situation? You're inviting the person to expand their consciousness, to look at the situation from a different perspective. This is why Jesus told parables. And the parables were always an inversion of the values of that particular culture or that particular group he was speaking to. Another way that can help you is do what we say we have in our Christian tradition, and that is look for metaphors in the scriptures that can help you hold the pain, the suffering, the joy, the delight, whatever it is you're feeling. So for example, if you're feeling like you're in exile in your own country, read the story of the exile. Where are you at in that journey? If you feel like you're in utter agony, agony in the garden. And I want to remind you, we use that term passion. The original meaning of that was a double meaning. It wasn't just the obvious physical passion that Christ is going through, but it was a passion of what was being done to him, and he was not actively responding. Okay? And that's part of what the agony is about. Even with all the work you've done, etc., you realize this is happening to you. Third is Judas in the garden. Do you feel betrayed? Do you feel betrayed? Do you feel abandoned? Psalm 88. What about the symbol of the cross? My God, why have you abandoned me? There's a lot of metaphors that you can use. And when you enter the metaphor, I'm inviting you to do it like Lectio Divina or the Ignatian way with your imagination. Why is it so important? Because imagination is where the divine resides. Your faith comes from your imagination, not your intellect. The intellect informs it. And so much of the strong, certainly negative feelings that we go through, that is coming from the unseen, unknown world. And it taps into a lot of unresolved issues on the inside. So for example, if you pick the scene of the agony in the garden, and you read that scripture, and you picture Christ there, just laid out on the ground, just weeping, you know, just so filled with inner turmoil, knowing he's deeply and completely loved by the Father, and yet also knowing that this is what he needs to do. He's just literally torn apart. Where do you see yourself in that scene? Are you on the ground with him, weeping? Are you cursing at God? Let your imagination flow, because that lets you know what's really happening on the inside of you. And let your prayer flow through that scene, where you're using the activity of your imagination to bring a right relationship with all aspects of your humanity, and hopefully after that, with those that are in your life. So what this election season has done is it's done what we are most afraid of as Americans. And let's face it, we are deathly afraid of being naked and vulnerable. And that's the way many Americans feel on all sides of the discussion table. So, what might this mean for us as Christian believers? It means that the symbol is the crucifix. That we are saved by a naked and vulnerable human being. Are you ready for this? And it's no different for you. Why do you think you can avoid being naked and vulnerable? If the Master said, "Come, follow me," this is how we do being human. I can't say more clear than that. Is it until you become naked and vulnerable and you embrace that, you cannot receive new life. You cannot be transformed. You cannot find a way for yourself, let alone anyone else. And that's why it scares us. Because we want comfort, not transformation. We want to continue to hold our own beliefs and thoughts. We become disconnected. Our heart, our soul, our body, our mind, disparate parts of our humanity. And we wonder why there's chaos in our society. It's because each of us are split. We're living in a dualistic reality. We're not living with the third way, the and, pulling it together, the place and the in-between. So I leave you with this image before we open it up for questions. In October, my good buddy Dick Martini and I are slowly, and I do mean slowly, making our way across the country via bicycle. We started in Bellingham, Washington, and we finally made it to the 14th state. So we started in Syracuse, upstate New York, made it over to Lewiston, Maine. Just missed making it to the ocean. We just didn't have any more time. So we'll go and finish it some other time. But we had amazing stories and experiences, which I could spend a whole hour telling you about. But one of the lessons that we both learned is that we passed through, if you know that part of the country, we passed through three different mountain ranges, three different national parks. Adirondack, the Green Mountains, and the White Mountains. And I got to tell you, I knew it was going to be tough, but I was in discomfort and pain every single day. Going up and down, not just hills, but mountains. And I was in pain for a week afterwards. But the lessons that I learned was, I have to learn how to climb a hill or a mountain. to do it gracefully. And I can tell you the best state for the engineers who put those roads together. My hat goes off to New Hampshire. But in Vermont, my God, the way they made those hills, they turn like this and it's upright. So we had to learn when we needed to ride in a very low gear. It's called a granny gear, by the way. It's the lowest you can get. Secondly, we had to learn when to take rest stops. Third, we had to learn, and this was very humbling, when to get off the bike and walk. Because our RPM was so slow, if we didn't, we'd fall over. It was painful on many levels. But in God's great wisdom, along the way, God would send angels to encourage us, to laugh with us, and to give us some insight. One day, we were taking a break by the side of the road, and we were standing in front of this woman's house, and she came out, and she said, "Are you guys okay?" "Oh yeah, we're fine, just taking a break." She said, "Oh, okay, you want some water, coffee, anything?" And we were just about ready to say no, and we looked down, and our water bottles were almost empty. So we said, "Sure, we can take some water." So we walk over and give her the bottles, and then she comes out with the bottle of water, and then she disappears back in the house, and she comes out with two plates of double, rich, thick chocolate cake. Freshly made. We were stunned. We looked at each other, and it was like, we scarfed it up. But it was like the sweetness of her generosity. She didn't know who we were. We had a lovely conversation. We were dirty, smelly, old men biking in front of her property. And she could have stayed in the house being afraid of us, but she came out and she greeted us. Her kindness stayed with us that entire day. It made the hills a lot easier. One of the things I learned from climbing those hills, and I shared this with Dick as well, and he admitted it, is that we have this in our scripture. It's by perseverance and patient endurance that we receive our salvation. That's in Romans. So to recognize that we have to be patient, we have to endure difficulties if we want to not only get to the top of the hill, but to finish the journey. And along the way, there'll be some sweet moments. There'll be some generous people, but then there'll be some people who try to cut us off the road, call us names, bad mood, all sorts of things. We say that the Lord is with us in good times and in bad. But why is it when it's only the bad times we call out to God and say, "How come you've abandoned me?" God is with us always and everywhere. So I leave that wisdom with you. When is God inviting you to get off the comfort of the way you've been living your life and walk for a while? Slow down. When is God inviting you to dig in? And rather than saying, "Okay, I'm going to make it to the top of the hill today," to say, "You know, I'm going to just go for 25 feet and then take a break." Okay? And when is God saying, "You know, you can make it to the top today. Just hang in there. Watch your breathing." It's about finding your own gears, your own energy, your own way of being human with respect and reverence. Because if you don't have it for yourself, you're not going to give it to anybody else. We give away that which we received. All right. Now comes the real questions. All right. Thank you. I hope that helps. Now, I'm going to do something different. Oh my gosh, the time has really gone by. I'm going to give you just 5 minutes, and I'll tell you why, because I have a little exercise I want you to do. So we got 5 minutes for questions.
My question is, what were you thinking as you're going uphill and you can see or maybe not see the top?
They want you to move it closer. Here. Here you go.
You know, you don't know exactly what's up there. What was going through your mind? You repeated to yourself why you were doing this.
Yeah. That's a great question. I forgot to mention that. Watch your self-talk. Because there were times, honestly, I did not have kind thoughts. I was cursing the person with the map together and the whole thing. But to me, that's where faith came in, is I know there's a town up there somewhere. I just don't know where. Like one night, actually two nights, we had to finish riding, and we were riding the entire day in the dark. In the dark. So my light wasn't working. So I would say faith or a trust in the traffic engineers. I was told that, yes, there is a town up there. Is this long? Sometimes we would stop and ask people. See, our map says this. What's the road look like? So it was about asking directions. Yep.
First, I'd like to thank you. You're very wise. I'm going to open with just a comment that expands on something you said about the warrior archetype. Mm. I think America was at its best when we were the righteous warrior at the end of World War II.
Mm-hmm.
I think America was at its best when we were the righteous warrior after World War II. We were beloved around the world because we fought for what was right. And that word has been used here in the auditorium today many, many times. I'm concerned about what you mean by right relationship, because it smacks of judgment,
mm-hmm.
that there is a right way to be and a wrong way to be. And mm-hmm. if you're in the wrong way, you're going to go mentally ill.
Mm.
And there are times that being in wrong relationship hurts so badly, you feel like you are going mad.
Yeah.
So can you help me by defining what is right relationship?
Absolutely. That's a great question. Thank you. Insightful. Right relationship, for me, as I read the scriptures, is about a relationship that's based on mutual respect and reverence for the other person or group and their story, their life experience, their personhood. That includes their thoughts and feelings, their body, their life experience. It also is enhanced, or being right in a sense, is that there's love there. There's a deep compassion. There's an awareness that, just like in you, as I said, there's a divine seed. There's a divine seed in this person. So even that simple reverential bowing in the Asian context is a reminder to that. It also means, and you alluded to this, and forgive me for saying this as a priest, but there are times you do need to walk away from a dangerous relationship, a destructive relationship, because at some level nothing is being served. And why we're invited to look at the fruits of it. It's not meant to be done quickly. But amongst the discernment of the community, if you've tried everything, I mean, this is where Codependence Anonymous came from. If you and the community discern this is not viable, it's destructive, perhaps you do need to step out. But the idea would be is that you'd involve the community more and say, maybe it's me. Maybe I need to look at this differently, or I need to try something differently, or I need to get some expert help, etc. But you certainly don't want to stand there alone. Keeping in mind that all of us have our own areas of brokenness. And given the right context, we can all be destructive. We can all say mean things. We can all hurt each other. But thank you for calling me on that. It's not right relationship like a museum piece where you just look at it and say, there it is. Is that every relationship has points that are right or better than others. And every relationship has weaknesses or shortcomings that we can be improved on. And that's why many of you are called to marriage, which is the school of love, you know? Or with your deep friends, you begin to get an honest feedback. I mean, you'll receive, if you know you're loved and respected, you'll receive words of directness that can help you from somebody that you know loves you and respects you much easier than somebody who despises you and is trying to tear you down. Does that help? Thank you. Very good question. Okay, here's what I'd like to do. This is a very ancient tradition amongst many of the First Nation peoples and Native peoples is called council. Have any of you heard of this? Right up here in this area, the Ojai Foundation, they have reclaimed this wisdom and they train people, men and women, how to be able to practice council. You can do this between you and one other person, or you can do this in a small group or a larger group. They've actually done this with as many as 250 people. We're not going to do that. What I invite you to do is to get into groups of four. Okay? And if for some reason you're having a hard time, no less than three. So three or four. If you could do that right now, I'll give you instructions. Yeah, the key is to get in a circle. They're called council circles. not supposed to be, at least for this section. I'll tell you why, because you really won't have a chance to speak. That's why. Okay, here are the directions, and please listen carefully. All right? First one is that you are to listen from the heart. Listen from the heart. This is not about analyzing, categorizing, fitting in the other. Rather, it's listening from the heart. Secondly, it's about speaking from the heart. You're not sharing ideas, great thoughts or insights. You're speaking from a feeling space. Third, to be spontaneous. In other words, as you're listening to somebody else, don't be thinking about your response or what you're going to say. Oh, I got to be better than her, okay? Fourth, now this is going to be a tough one for some of you, be lean of expression. Be lean of expression. In other words, get to the point. Okay? Be lean of expression. And I know you can do this. We only have 10 minutes. Now, here's the other thing. Would one of you choose a symbol? It could be your keys. It could be a pen. It could be anything. Okay? Anything you want. Okay, you all have a symbol? Now, this is going to be called, for lack of a better title, your talking stick or a talking piece. The one who holds the talking piece is the only one to speak. Nobody else can speak when he or she is holding that. When she's done, she passes it on to somebody else who is ready and willing to speak. Is that clear? Okay. So, the role of the other three, or four, or two, is to listen from the heart, to truly be present to this person, their story. The one who is speaking, you are to speak from the heart. You are to be lean of expression. You are to speak according to the prompt I'm going to give you. Okay? Stay with what you want to share. Now, here's another caveat. Let's suppose you don't want to speak. At some time, you do need to take the talking stick and just hold it and let your silence speak. Okay? Because amongst the native people, silence is a language as well that's honored. Any questions about the process? Okay, here is the prompt. And I encourage you to sit with the prompt for just a minute so everybody can get their collection, and then whoever is ready to speak at first would take the talking stick and begin to speak. So the prompt is this. What are you feeling right now? You can bring in the political process we've been talking about. It could be this moment of what you're experiencing with this group. But what are you feeling right now? So sit with that question. What are you feeling right now? When you're ready, go ahead. Okay, hold the discipline. I see several people talking in the same group. If you finish the prompt, here's a second one. And it's this one. How do you think God is calling you to reach out to others or to reach out beyond your comfort level? How is God inviting you to reach out beyond your comfort zone to reach out to others? That's only if you finish the first prompt. Okay, thank you for sharing. We're going to conclude with a very simple way of praying. And what I'm going to ask you to do is, it's called a lightning round. I'd like you to think about one word to summarize what you're grateful for. So you might say family. You might say peace. Whatever it is that you want to give thanks to God for, that you're grateful for in your life, just say one word or one image if you prefer an image. And you just go right around the circle. Okay, that would be your final prayer. Okay, thank you very much for listening to each other. God bless you. Okay.